welcome to another Beaver Pod Life episode. And today we've got with us Ben Benson, AWCF Master Farrier. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you doing?
Really well, thanks, Ben. Thanks for coming with us today to talk to us. So, Ben, you're president of the British Blacksmith and Farriers Association at this time. And we had you at London International Horse Show talking at back in November. Well, December, was it December?
Yeah, December,
Back in London. So, yeah, we talked a bit about working as a team. Now, I'd love to chat to you a bit more about this and your take on how vets and farriers can better work together on a day-to-day basis. So tell us a little bit about yourself first.
So I'm a farrier based in Banbury in North Oxfordshire. I'm one of the last training farriers in the country. There's about 100 of us left, and I specialise in, if you call it that, in sort of performance horses. It's always been a big passion of mine. I started my apprenticeship with a farrier called Hayden Price, and was really fortunate. Hayden started the sort of sport horse, performance horse shoeing sort of movement. And when I qualified, Hayden sort of took me under his wing and sort of opened doors and made introductions. And I ended up being very fortunate. I worked for Team GB for probably 14, 15 years now. And I worked as one of the farriers at London Olympics, Rio Olympics, and then I was out in Tokyo. And then I've not long got back from the Asian Games out in China. And I also am really fortunate. I work with Team Sweden for their international eventing team. So I've done the Europeans and the World Equestrian Games with those as well. So really interesting, sort of being both sides with the athlete as an individual or looking after whatever athletes turn up. And then I've got my practice based, obviously, in Banbury. And and work there with my apprentices doing some referral work that comes to us as well.
Of course, you're quite busy and well-travelled as well.
Yeah.
Love to see your passport. that's fab. So, you've got sort of a great experience then of working in teams, in like real teams as well, competitive teams, and also just in the general sort of horse population as well, you know, working on day-to-day kind of normal pleasure and sports horses
with
their owners.
We've got everything from Olympic eventers, Olympic dressage horses, right down to a goat that I trim. And the goat doesn't care.
Nice.
The goat doesn't care. We donkeys get them, they don't care. So I think it's good. It makes me laugh when I do it because it's really humbling. You think there you were in all these amazing places, but this goat doesn't care. So no.
Doesn't care who you are, how special you are.
Yeah.
Oh, and what sort of your, I suppose, the things, particularly as a president, I suppose, what you've been trying to do during your time in that role, what are your kind of big areas of interest and areas that you want to see improve when it comes to working with vets? How do you want to sort of address that?
I think one of my biggest goals when I became president was to promote the industry, to promote the association, and just to show the because obviously I've always been very fortunate working with really good vets, be it on the eventing or the equestrian team or even in our own area, and vets I've sort of worked with, I've been really fortunate to have a good relationship, and it's something I've been really passionate about because I do bump into the physios and the dentists and all the other sort of para allied professionals. I wanted to show the industry how good British farriers were. And actually, we have a high level of training. We have a high level of dedication to do what we do. And it was really just trying to kind of sell farriery back to the industry and show vets and allied professionals how good farriery was. So that's been my sort of goal with it, really, and why I was really glad when you mentioned coming to London International. To try and showcase what we do.
And it was a fascinating day, 2 days of CPD actually, and I think it really highlighted how much skill there is in the equine industry amongst those allied professionals and how much that varies as well. I think we've got to be honest, you know, you've got people that are doing varied jobs and varied sort of have a different amount of experience in different areas, but actually if we can all kind of come together and utilize that huge sort of array of different people that we've got there and all the different experiences, and respect that as well, respect that some people have got strengths and weaknesses in different areas, then we can actually do a much better job as a team. And it's easy, I think, for people working as individuals on a sort of lone worker basis to maybe not get exposed to that. So what sort of message would you have for those people to try and sort of branch out and utilize that teamwork approach more?
Do you know what? I think that, you know, 360, everyone looking after their sector is always going to be the best approach. One of the most humbling things for me was working with Rachel Murray all those years ago, and Rachel sort of showing me how actually stability in joints and limbs was primarily through musculature. And actually, from a physiological point, if that horse wasn't strong enough, it doesn't matter. Anything else doesn't matter. And that was the bit where, you know, as farriers, we all think we control the limb and we control movement, but actually it's the horse's body that is the biggest influence on it. You just make a suggestion. Whether that horse's body is able to cope with it or not is a different matter. So I think that was the biggest hit for me. So suddenly you start realizing how actually collectively we all add or subtract to the horse. And I think, and this probably is something that we see a lot, you know, farriery is a very lonely industry. You know, it's a lot of guys and girls working on their own, and they, you know, if you've got that sort of mentality, you come out of college and you're asking questions and you're thinking about what you're doing, but sooner or later you hit that point where you have a bit of burnout. You know, it's a really bloody hard job, and physically, you know, as well as mentally, and you're on your own, and everything obviously is never the owner's fault that it's lost a shoe, or you're constantly making up, and you get to the point where you stop asking questions and you start justifying. I can't do this because of that. This is always like that because of this. And that's the bit where you sort of hit that wall of what you were able to achieve, I think. And I think that's where being around others helps you, because then you can kind of lean on them. So I realise, actually, for me, my success is the fact that I can spot when I've got as far as I can go and I need to bring someone else in. So bringing the vet in, you know, when I've got a horse that's persistently losing shoes, there's a great one. Loads of farriers get knocked really hard for, well, why is this horse losing a shoe? It might be that actually, you know, the reason the horse is losing a shoe is because actually there's a bit of an arthritic change in one hock. The last farrier didn't flag it up and he got sacked. But I go in and go, well, hang on a minute, this horse doesn't like it being nailed on and I can't pick that foot up that high. Have you had the vet out? You need to get someone to come and look at the horse, because it's not very symmetrical when it's trotting up. And suddenly then you get to a point where you go, well, no wonder it's going to lose a shoe. It's got limited movement in that leg. So suddenly I've gone from, well, I've kind of got someone fighting my corner. And I think this is the biggest thing that we all need to get back in as a professional industry, looking after the horses, actually bringing in each other and using each other's expertise to kind of strengthen our position, rather than being an individual and kind of hospital passing it to someone.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think when you own it and then bring the others in, and then even at the best, you know, if it, or even at the worst, if it doesn't go right, it's been a collective decision. It's not one person's, yes, you know, that can get sacked for it. We all made that decision, so it sits with us. But I'd say that the most important part of gaining that group support is relationships. And I think the one thing that we're really, really bad in the equine industry is being too busy and just kind of thinking that we're all on the same page, when actually sometimes you need to develop that relationship. So certainly with some of the programs I look after, and in the past, you know, always said, build the bridge before you need to walk over it. So before you have a horse that has a farriery issue or there's an intervention that needs to be made, that relationship needs to start from the moment the horse comes on the program, where you introduce yourself to the farrier, you introduce what it is you're doing, why you're looking at it, this is how it is. So they kind of know where you're coming from before you start. And I think the number of times on yards where I see, you know, busy vets turning up and just getting their head down and walking from one side to the other into the box, you know, deal with the owner, deal with the customer, and then back in the car because they're you know, they've got 10 more to do. Sometimes just that bit of a stop and both of you have a minute for an acknowledgement and just a bit of a chat can make such a difference when it comes to dealing with things further on down the line. And then I think, you know, it's, you kind of know how each other shoots. Some people like a direct approach. Others need the hand holding a bit more through that process, but you don't know that if you don't know the individual.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Like that time spent invested in building the relationship before the problems occur can make the problems so much less of an issue, really, can't they, to deal with, and much more straightforward to try and to find a way through, because you've already got a relationship to do that with.
Yeah.
It's so common, isn't it, for a vet sick and a farrier to come across each other for the first time when the horse is lame with a foot problem.
Yeah.
Or that makes it difficult, doesn't it, sometimes?
Yeah. Or even worse is not at all. The communication is done through the owner, which is always like Chinese whispers, because the owner then gives their interpretation of what each of you said to the other. And there might be a bit of subconscious removal of anything that they don't like. So they might hang on to something. And it might not actually be that. And quite often I found at times with certain clients where I've actually rung the vet direct, you know, you can have much more valuable and much more of a positive outcome just by picking up that phone. But by passing messages on through owners, it slows things down so much more. And, you know, certainly when there needs to be a discussion on how to do something, you know, and farriers get really frustrated at that. Certainly, you know, I've gone into situations to help other farriers where the vet's prescribed a package, which textbook would work, and it might have worked on the last horse, but actually, confirmationally, that horse, that won't work for this horse. So understanding the mechanics is really important to understanding the package, but it's just that breakdown's been lost. So one side ends up going over the top of the other, and then everyone starts getting upset because they're not being listened to, and that just slows everything down and sometimes even completely breaks that relationship down, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, because none of what we do is that simple. You know, it's all very complex and very specific to the individual horse and the situation. So trying to make kind of blanket comments or blanket kind of suggestions, particularly via owners, about what the other person should be doing is not going to, A, go down well, but also not going to be productive or helpful. So having that direct communication between you is presumably and obviously the best way to do it, isn't it? And you use WhatsApp groups, don't you, which I think I used to use all the time in my clinical work. It's really helpful, obviously, with the owner involved and the owner's permission, but you can then share information in a live way, can't you? And images, x-rays, videos.
Yeah, definitely. You can really share things in real time. You've also got that to reference. But I think sometimes as well, text messages and things like that can be read in the wrong way, whereas a voice note can very much be interpreted in only one way. So it gives you the ability to kind of also not allow someone to fall out with you for having a different opinion. But I do also think sometimes if there is a difference of opinion, having that conversation out of earshot of the owner is really valuable. You know, don't disagree in front of the owner. You need to be united front. But equally, having that robust relationship where you can discuss it is really important. So for me, I think the vets that always do really well in my area, and the vets that do really well in any of the teams that I've ever worked with, always come in with the question, how do you think we can do this? You know, this is what I need. I need this much elevation, or I need this joint to be elevated, or I need this, you know, stability from here. How are we going to achieve that? Because then that's brilliant. That's me do it. I can do my bit, but you're explaining to me exactly what you need the end result to be, and then I can kind of own that. So, you know, it just means that we're all being kind of given the opportunity to own our sector. So in front of the client, that looks great, but equally we're respecting each other.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. It's what we're trying to achieve, but then let that individual person with that skill set do their bit to achieve that, do their own piece of the jigsaw puzzle, isn't it? So you're still communicating, but you're not telling each other what to do in a literal sense.
And I think as long as you put in the caveats of what the outcome needs to be and how that's going to be measured, if it doesn't happen, then you can have that, well, what's our plan B? If this doesn't work, what's plan B going to be? So you can all know if this isn't working, then we're going to be doing this, rather than deciding that hasn't worked, so now you've got to do what I've got to do, I wanted to do. You know, it's just that, just kind of like smoothing it over. But that's so powerful when you get a vet that comes at a problem like that, the outcome is nearly always sorted, you know.
Yeah,
it's guaranteed, isn't it? Because you're all on the same page.
Definitely. And what, from a sort of very practical point of view, I suppose, like hints and tips almost for vets out there listening that maybe want to know what they can do other than this communication side to help farriers that they work with. You know, things like taking good foot balance x-rays, or you've already touched on it a bit, you know, like not making throwaway comments, you know, because I mean, we talked about this at London International, you know, that farriers have a lot smaller number of clients. So just talk to me a little bit about those two things, like literally nice things that people could do tomorrow, if you like, when they come across their farriers of their clients, like what they could do to help.
I think always be positive, you know, saying something nice about someone's work, you know, is a great way to get them to sort of to wind in and listen to you. You're right, a farrier may only have 100 and something horses on their books. So they have far more knowledge of those horses than the vet probably would in their expertise, far more understanding of case history of those horses than their own expertise. But it's, you know, a vet making a throwaway comment or even just trying to find something, or maybe it is the foot balance, maybe it is this, that can be so detrimental for a farrier's reputation. And then everyone starts getting their back up. So, I think, you know, making sure that you come in with a positive. It's the old what's it sandwich, you know, something good, something bad, something good. You know, things like x-rays, you know, and I've had it myself where I've had x-rays sent to me by some very senior partners in practices, and you've sort of, without realising, send the email back saying, oh, you know, really sorry, these aren't good enough. You know, did the partner get to have a, you know, take any? And then you come back, that was the senior partner that did that. You know, foot balance x-rays are so crucial when it comes to dealing with foot balance, that if you're going to make a comment on them, it's really important that they are accurate. Certainly when I've had them sent to me and I can see two sides of a shoe, or if the toe clip is touching one of the heels, they're not good enough for foot balance discussion. So it's kind of, you know, if the trim needs to be improved, then you need to be objective about it. That's what the x-rays are for. It's really important that you objectively look at your x-ray beforehand, because it doesn't help anyone. And then you've got that dilemma then where the farrier doesn't want to say anything to the owner, because the owner's then just spent X amount of hundreds of pounds on something that wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And you know, it's sort of just, so it's just making sure that if you're all working together, you've kind of got each other's back. And just making sure you're good with it.
Yeah, and I suppose it's the same old human thing of giving constructive criticism as well. If, you know, if maybe there is some improvement for the other person and how they do things, it's, if you've got a good relationship with them, then it's much easier to give that feedback, isn't it, as opposed to it being someone you don't know so well. So it comes back to that good relationship thing, doesn't it?
Definitely. And there are always going to be grumpy farriers out there that their backs are hurting them, you know, and they're really struggling. And that sometimes I think also is perhaps the other perception with, you know, certainly when everyone says a grumpy old farrier, you know, you hit that point where physically, you know, you're doing 10 or 15 rounds of tug of war a day on your body. And, you know, I know, and that has an effect physically and mentally on you, especially in cold, wet weather. So I think it's, you know, as farriers, we need to own that and be responsible for it. But equally, it's, you know, as you're walking up to a farrier and they've got a bit of a stroke face on, it's not that they're angry with you. It just might be that they're concentrating quite hard and their back's giving them a bit of jip. But, you know, if you can work past that and just have that that opening conversation and start things off on a positive, it's amazing how much more you can achieve.
Yeah, it's like basic communication skills, really, isn't it? It's just we want to work on them.
Yeah, I was listening to a really interesting thing, and it talked about like where we see at the moment on social media. You know, we see lots of people arguing with each other about their perception of things, when actually what's really important is we understand each other's perspective. When you understand perspective, it's so much more powerful. And I think that's probably what I do as a farrier, is because I'm lucky enough to have started my career with, you know, working with vets like Jenny Hall and Rachel Murray and those guys that, you know, work in big practices, do, you know, really interesting jobs for lots of different people in lots of different stressful situations. You kind of clock what they do. And I think if you can pick yourself up out your body and look at what you're doing from a 180-degree perspective, quite often you will always achieve what it is you set out to do. But when you're stuck in what you want, it must be this, that makes it really hard to bring people with you.
Yeah, God, yeah, that is absolutely, that's exactly what we need to be trying to achieve and try and get better at. Well, that's like a really nice place to finish off on, unless you've got something else that you wanted to say. I mean, I think that's a really nice take-home message for us all. It's to work on our communication skills as much as our clinical skills, isn't it, really? So thank you for coming today and chatting to us, Ben. It's been really, really helpful, I think, to hear it from the farrier's perspective. And we'll look forward to seeing you at more of our CPD, I hope, and perhaps some more podcasts if you've got some more time on your hands.
Definitely. It'll be a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.